The masters almost surely have a plan. There's clearly maybe something there beyond the realm of man. And until you've thoroughly tested every last close trusted view, I find the more you think you know, the less you really do.
That's true, Dr. Zaius.
Very well.
Where would we be without THC? 'Cause we know they're lying to us, just don't know.
Here we go, Ironside Chatters. How the hell are you? Drinking a little drink, smoking a little smoke, and raising that middle finger high to the oppressive power pyramid propped up on the backs of the common man. From sunny San Diego, I'm Greg Carlwood, and today is a real treat because we spend a fair amount of time trying to analyze occult symbols and mystical messages from Hollywood, NASA, award shows, and nearly everywhere else they pop up, wondering if we're ignorantly witnessing the manifestation of some ritual magic of the elite, if they're paying tribute to some multidimensional deity, or if we're blowing everything out of proportion. We see it, we'd love to understand it, but most of us really don't have the years of study it takes to be familiar with the roots, the origins, the ancient traditions, and the entities that are sometimes being referenced. But lucky for us, today's guest has just such a context. His name is Chris Knowles, a bona fide expert in synchromysticism, occult analysis, pop culture, symbology, and alternative history. He's also the man behind the Eagle Award-winning book, Our Gods Wear Spandex, The Secret History of Comic Book Heroes, as well as The Secret History of Rock and Roll, The Mysterious Roots of Modern Music. He's also co-authored the quintessential X-Files tome, The Complete X-Files, behind the series, the myths, and the movies. But that's not all, folks. You might also know him as the guy behind the popular Secret Sun blog at secretsun.blogspot.com, where he provides a similar breakdown on all things interesting. An honor and a pleasure. Chris, my man, how the hell are you?
I'm doing all right, Greg. Good to be here.
Yeah, man. Thanks for doing this. I am pretty psyched. I've seen tons of interesting info from you at this point. I mean, you've written about how rock and roll is just a repackaging of ancient mystery cults, how superheroes are just a repackaging of the gods of mythology, and I'm noticing a pattern here, man. I mean, is anything original anymore?
No, not at all. It's just the human psyche, you know, recycling the same old archetypes over and over again. We can't help it. It's in our makeup. You know, we face the same old crises and we respond in the same old ways. It's just part of the programming.
The secular nature of time.
Yeah, where exactly that programming comes from, you know, it's an open question, but it seems to be the same old patterns manifesting themselves over time. They just do so in different ways. And once you peel away the surface details and peek underneath, you know, you'll see the same structure underneath. It's all the same underneath once you get past the superficial aspects of it all. So you know, we're the same creatures we've always been. I don't really think things have changed all that much. I mean, technology has changed, but it hasn't changed who we are, at least yet. We hear a lot of talk about transhumanism and all that kind of stuff, and I think that's all a bunch of hype. I'm very skeptical about it because I actually read the articles beyond the headlines, and it's all speculation and pseudoscience. You know, I think we are who we are and have always been, and we really take for granted how elaborate and technologically advanced in their own way the ancients were. They had steam engines and very elaborate forms of storing and retrieving information in their libraries and things like that. And then they had, you know, I think they had more powerful brains than we have. I think our brains are withering. I think the technology that we have is crippling our brains. They were smarter than we are. I really believe that very strongly.
Yeah, I'm with you. I kind of feel that way too. But it is a pretty big 180 from the conventional thought, because it seems like we're taught this idea that we've been on a steady incline of progress throughout humanity's history. But when you look at the depth of their art and writing, even just a couple hundred years ago, it seems pretty clear people were reading works well above the level of a Maxim magazine. I also think it has a lot to do with the education system and our slow devolution process. We're losing ground in nearly every category for as long as I've been alive. And that seems pretty calculated and orchestrated as well.
Yeah, there's definitely a devolutionary process at work. There's no question in my mind. I'm a student of, you know, popular culture. When I was researching Our Gods Were Hispanics, and I was just looking at the level of popular culture, say, in the 30s, I mean, it shows a level of sophistication in the artwork and in the writing and stuff like that that puts us to shame. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, you don't even need to go back that far. I mean, go back and look at an issue of Time magazine or Playboy magazine or just any popular magazine from the early 70s and look at these little slivers, these little pamphlets that they put out now, mostly pictures, dumbed down analyses. You know, they seem to be afraid to burden our minds with too much text.
Right.
Yeah, and you know, that's 40 years. That's a blink of an eye.
Mm-hmm.
That's not even anything in the span of human history. 40 years is nothing.
Right.
If you just go back, go to any used bookstore or, you know, anything like that and look at the old magazines, you'll be shocked. You will literally be shocked to see how we have devolved, how things have just seemingly fallen apart. And, you know, a lot of it is the educational system.
Yeah.
But a lot of it is technology. I mean, we've become so over-reliant on technology. Google searches replacing memory, you know, human memory is a powerful tool. And we've allowed it to wither because we can just use these crutches.
Yeah.
So.
That's true. The technology aspect is right on because I can still remember phone numbers from when I was 12, 13, 14 years old before there were cell phones. I still have those numbers in my head, but you know, I've been with the same girl for 6 years. I don't know her phone number.
Yeah. Well, because you probably have it on speed dial.
Exactly.
You know, I remember when I was a kid, you had to actually dial phone numbers. You know, you had the dials. It was even before touch tone.
Right.
I mean, I remember when touch tone phones came along. That was like, oh, my God, this is like, you know, super science. But yeah. Anyway, I digress.
Yeah. So a lot of this, the type of analysis that you do is picking apart recent events or the latest to come out of our engineered pop culture or statements from NASA, these kind of things. And, you know, things seem to be moving pretty fast sometimes, especially now. I mean, what are some of the numbers, symbols, connections that you're seeing in the news stories or current events that we've seen lately?
Well, I'll tell you something. I got to a point a few years ago, I was doing a lot of that stuff. I was really tuned in to the news, and I started to feel like an accomplice. I started to feel like I was being used.
Mm.
You know, I started to feel like I was part of a process that I was like a link in a chain. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Absolutely. I get that vibe sometimes myself.
You know, that, you know, they put these symbols out, they put these numbers out, they put all this crypto information out, and people don't understand it and people don't process it until somebody comes along and says, hey, this is what this means. You know, look at this. Pay attention to this. And until somebody does that, it just floats down the memory hole. Mm-hmm. And I really came to feel that I was part of this process, that I was an unwitting pawn, that I was a tool, that they were running all these games. And I was part of this. And I wrote about this. I think I wrote about this on the Solar Satellite, which is one of the sister blogs of the Secret Sun. And I started to feel like, you know, this, I felt dirty, you know? I did. And I have done some work, you know, especially with NASA, because that's a whole different situation. I'm interested still in what NASA is doing because they're trying to tell us something. That they're playing a double game. There's a narrative and then there's a secret narrative because they're trying to tell us what's really going on between the lines, because they're not, maybe, I don't know if they're not allowed, but there's a certain, maybe a taboo against saying what's really going on. With all these things going on with Pluto. And the best example of this, and this is something I called out, and I sort of got on the radar. I had some major media outlets paying attention to me all of a sudden. And it was really creepy because what I pointed out when they were taking pictures of Pluto, I said, this isn't about Pluto. They don't care about Pluto. They are worried about what's beyond Pluto. You know, I think what they're really worried about is that they're worried about Planet X. They're worried about trans-Plutonian objects that could create problems, that could enter into the solar system. You know, that there's this whole lore, you know, say, you know, with the Nibiru and all these kind of things.
Right.
But also things like Nemesis. You know, there's a whole lore, Emmanuel Velikovsky, a lot of this kind of information that is put into that shelf of pseudoscience. Okay, they put that on that shelf officially, okay? But right. I think unofficially that it's still very much a concern. Now, I said when they were taking these pictures of Pluto that this New Horizons probe is not about Pluto. It's about going past Pluto and trying to figure out what's going on, because the solar system is anywhere from 1 to 2 light years in diameter. It's enormous. Mm-hmm. We have no idea what's out there. We talk about these solar systems that are, I don't know, 20 light years, 200 light years away. It's absurd to me, because they're talking about, you know, these perturbations on orbits and things like that. To me, I don't even take it seriously anymore, because we don't know what's in our own solar system. You know, they talk about the Oort cloud and things like this. So anyway, but what I did is that I said, no, this is not what this is about. This is about what's beyond. This is about Planet X, or, you know, whether there's Planet X and then there's a brown dwarf, because there's a thesis that most solar systems consist of a star and an unignited twin. Okay. So that a lot of people think that the sun has somewhere out beyond our vision, what's called a brown dwarf.
Right.
So I was writing about this, and all of a sudden, I guess I started lighting up board somewhere, because Paris Match, which is a big French magazine, was linking to me. I was contacted by Newsweek. I mean, all of a sudden, I just lit up a board somewhere. And soon afterwards, then the stories come out. Oh, well, maybe this is about Planet X. You know, then the stories start leaking into the mainstream science press that maybe that this actually is not really about Pluto. I mean, Pluto's nice, Pluto's interesting, but maybe this is about something beyond. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one of the reasons I was able to sort of spot this is that I was sort of looking at the symbolism. You know, that the symbolism is sort of the marker. It's sort of the call out.
Right.
And when you're able to sort of decipher this symbolism, then you sort of understand what they're really talking about. You know, the Plutonian symbolism, and you know, there's all the symbolism with death and the underworld and things like that. It all seemed to me that it was all about this mysterious, you know, world, like the River Styx, you know, that you travel this invisible cosmic River Styx beyond Pluto into this trans-Plutonian mystery zone out there. And like I said, I mean, there are beliefs that the solar system is anywhere from 1 to 2 light years in diameter. I mean, that's enormous. It's almost unfathomable. But that's just an example of why I still pay attention to the situations with NASA, because I still believe that there are things that they want to tell us, but maybe can't.
Yeah.
The stuff like, you know, like say like the Video Music Awards, I'm so bored with that by now. It's so obvious. It's so simplistic. It's just monotonous. You know, the usual eye and the triangle and all that kind of nonsense.
Right,
I mean, you know, and all the satanic symbolism. It's so Egyptian tired. And, you know, the Egyptian symbolism. It's all so tired. It's all so overdone. I mean, I was writing about this stuff 8 years ago. I mean, it's just been done to death. It's just so simplistic. And, you know, one of the things I always say, people will ask me a question like, you know, what is this stuff emanating from, like, the collective unconscious, or is this stuff being put there intentionally? And my answer is always like, if it's really dumb and obvious and repetitive, it's put there intentionally. If it's weird and oblique and hard to fathom, and it and sort of itches at your brain and you have to sort of pick it out, then it's welling up from somewhere else. You know, it's maybe something that they've put into motion, but the stories are starting to tell themselves. Does that make sense to you?
It does. I kind of like what you say in Knowles' laws. The more obvious something is, the more attention mainstream media gives to it, the more it's probably not what you really need to be looking for.
Yeah. That's an old magician's trick.
Yes.
You know, it's misdirection. You know, the left hand is busy while the right hand is performing the magic trick. And I just took that maxim and I just applied it to what's going on in the media. And then, you know, it's pretty predictive.
Yeah, man, it is. And I mentioned your Knowles Laws section of the site. I really like all the things that you've got down there. I think they provide a pretty solid barometer for navigating the conspiracy field. I mentioned that one. And that's this other one that makes a really good point. You say, whenever a controversy over symbolism erupts in the media, it's usually disguising another hidden symbolic message altogether. I think that's pretty spot on, man, and it's just what we're talking about here. But do you think some of these things are sometimes engineered rituals of some sort, or is that where conspiracy bloggers take things too far?
No, I definitely do. I definitely do. But I don't think that's anything that you really need to worry about, as far as if you're not familiar with it, if you don't know about it, you should learn about it and you should sort of pay attention to it. But after that, it doesn't feed your mind. It doesn't do anything. It doesn't go anywhere. It just goes around in circles. It's like a merry-go-round. You get on a merry-go-round and you get off at the same entry point, right? To me is a lot of the symbology that they put out there in the media is, you know, they found that people like to pay attention to it, and people won't pay attention to other things when they're paying attention to this stuff because they think it's some grand secret. They think there's some deeper meaning to it, and usually there isn't. Sometimes there is.
Right. I think that's a great point because it's really tantalizing to look at some of this stuff and see certain symbols come out of Jay-Z and Rihanna and seeing what they're doing in these performances. It's full of overblown symbolism, but yet the things like the Trans-Pacific Partnership or low wages, these are the things that aren't quite as sexy, yes, but they're affecting you directly.
Yes. Exactly. That's exactly it. And that gets back to the whole magician's trick, you know, the misdirection with one hand while the other hand is cutting your wages and cutting your benefits. That kind of thing. So true. Yes, it's very true. And that's the thing I worry about, because a lot of this symbolism is aimed at people who are the most vulnerable, you know, who are being targeted. And, you know, they eat the stuff up when they should be really worried more about bread and butter issues.
That's
really another reason why, in a lot of ways, I stopped focusing on that stuff. Because like I did, I said, I felt like I was an accomplice.
Yeah, you didn't want to participate in that distraction.
You know, everybody loves a secret and everybody likes to figure out a puzzle. And they sort of put these puzzles out there for you and make you feel like you're in on a secret, you know?
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, you're not sitting at the table with them. you're not part of their agenda.
That's true.
So what purpose does it serve in the end? And that's really why I used to do so much of that stuff, and why I felt that I had to step back, because I wasn't part of of that agenda. I wasn't sitting at the table with them. I wasn't included. I wasn't palling around with Jay-Z and Beyonce. You know, they weren't inviting me to their parties. Right. You know, why should I sit there and magnify their little ritualistic gamesmanship? You know, what purpose does it serve for me? It wasn't getting me anywhere.
Mm-hmm. My only hope with looking at some of that stuff is that we could, you know, piece together parts of the playbook for what might be coming down the pike.
I almost feel like everything is just so out in the open now anyway, that, that things have gotten so bad and so obvious that they don't even need to hide anything. And I think a lot of that is, you know, and in some ways that it's the dumbing down of society. I mean, it's like they don't need to hide anything because people don't pay attention anyway. How many people know what the Trans-Pacific Partnership even means?
Good point.
If you stood outside with a microphone and asked people if they even heard of it, how many people do you think would even know what you were talking about?
Man, it's tough. 40%? I think that'd be a hopeful number.
40%?
You think less? 4 out of 10?
I think maybe 14%. I'm not kidding. I'm not kidding.
I'm an optimist.
You are an optimist. I mean, maybe I'm too pessimistic, but I think if you were lucky, 14% would know what you were talking about. Because the papers don't talk about it. You know, they bury it in the middle or the end. Or that maybe they don't even cover it at all. You know, and it's so much different than when I was growing up. It's interesting, you know, when you talk about conspiracy culture, because conspiracy culture was a much different thing when I was growing up. You know, you talk about the X-Files, it was much more like my entry point was sort of like that lone gunman kind of conspiracy culture. It was much more of a counterculture, hippie. It was a different. It wasn't like Alex Jones, is what I'm trying to say.
Right.
It was much more of a counterculture vibe.
Yeah.
Like books like 50 Greatest Conspiracies of All Time and things like that. And you know, on WBAI in New York, I don't know how many people are familiar with that. There was some really good, interesting conspiracy-oriented radio programs. Gary Null and. It was a really good show called Expert Witness that did a lot of that stuff. So I sort of came from almost like a left libertarian viewpoint. And I think maybe the dominant voice now is maybe like a right libertarian point of view.
Yeah, me too. I hear that.
And, you know, I don't necessarily have a problem with that. It's just not my culture. And there are... You know, there are certain aspects of the culture that I am uncomfortable with.
Definitely.
But at the same time, I mean, we're all subject to the same depredations. You know, we're all on the other end of the stick, you know.
Yeah.
We're all in this together, I guess I should say.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. I want to bring it back to NASA just a little bit more because we just had some recent announcements from them. They just announced this 2-mile-wide asteroid pass by. They announced it yesterday, said it's going to be within the next 48 hours, and it just so happens to be asteroid number 86666. I mean, that's another one of those strange things.
You wonder if it even exists. I mean, how do we even know? This is the end of Mercury retrograde.
Mm.
Today, as we're taping, which is October 9th. Does that asteroid even exist, or is there some ritualistic significance to this? I mean, this is the thing that you really have to wonder. I mean, we have no way of confirming. I guess maybe amateur astronomers can tell us for sure, but...
Well, see, that's a problem that I'm really facing with my own audience right now, in that NASA deceptions seem to have pushed people into such territory that any guest who builds their ideas off some NASA data is dismissed by a good chunk of people, which is really what's fueling the growing flat Earth movement, too, I think. But
yes.
How would you suggest people read between the lines of what NASA spits out without going so far as to doubt space itself exists?
Well, here's the thing. People have to remember that NASA is basically a military intelligence operation.
Right.
NASA has a PR front. You know, oh, hey, we're growing tomatoes and playing guitar up in space. You know, it's so ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
I think you just have to use your common sense. I understand. I actually, when the flat earth stuff came out, I was really fascinated by it. It was almost like it was very punk rock, you know. It was like big FU. There's a big FU, and I think that's a huge part of it. It's just like people just get so sick of the lies and the manipulations that it's just they throw up their hands. And it's just like, the hell with it. You know, it's a flat earth and
take it to the extreme.
But that's human nature. That's going to happen. It's always happened and it always will.
Mm-hmm.
People are going to have to just come to their own conclusions. You know, you can argue with them, but I found that flat earthers love to argue. Yeah. And they're really good at it. You know, they have a really good body of evidence that they draw on to argue, because I think it's basically it's almost reminds me of like a debating society point.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, that's just inevitable.
Yeah.
Jonathan Banken, who wrote the 50 greatest conspiracies of all time, you know, he said that, you know, conspiracy culture was just an inevitable outgrowth of government disinformation.
Mm-hmm.
When, you know, because he was being interviewed about it, and he just said that, you know, people just get lied to so much. You know, this is post Watergate, post Vietnam, and things like that, or post Iran Contra, that there's going to be always going to be a certain amount of people who are just going to take that extreme stance.
Mm-hmm. You're right. And I mean, I love looking at that stuff, not because I come to the same conclusion, but because I love to see their arguments where they're poking holes in all the things we've been told from NASA. Like, that part I love. But then when it comes to the conclusion of a flat earth, that's where I kind of get off and say, you know, I can't draw any conclusions from this. You know, that's a lot of great data, a lot of great holes you've poked in their lies, but I just can't get on board with the conclusion.
Yeah, I can't either. But that's the way I feel about a lot of stuff in the conspiracy realm. It's useful to poke holes. It's like you agree with their, you know, debating points, but you might not agree with, you know, you agree with their cons, but you don't agree with their pros. Is basically, yeah, what I'm trying to say. And I think that's just, again, that's just going to be an inevitable part of the process. I've been there and sort of done that. I don't really pay attention to it because it's just, you can only hear the same points over and over again so many times. It just gets to be a bit much. I don't actually believe in the flat earth, but I'm sure I'm going to, you know, hear about it. But I, you know.
Well, you would either
that's
way.
That's just me.
So you did mention with this New Horizons thing, the possibility of a brown dwarf out there. And that makes me think of the, you know, the Thunderbolts project, I'm sure you're familiar with, or the electric universe model, the idea that Saturn was once a brown dwarf and that this idea of a golden age might have been at a time when our solar system was radically different, getting its energy from a different body than the sun. And that's pretty far out stuff, but we do see a lot of Saturn symbolism, and this is where some people try to connect the dots. What do you make of the Saturnian symbolism we see and that idea that Saturn might have been way more important at a time, or maybe still is, than we know in the mainstream?
Well, I'll tell you, Saturn, I don't think, had the mass to be a brown dwarf. I mean, they said, you know, Jupiter doesn't have the mass to be an unignited sun. So I can't see Saturn being big enough.
Mm.
You know, I could be wrong, and I'm sure people will correct me if I am wrong. Saturn is sort of the nemesis of Jupiter, and I think it plays into a sort of contrarian undercurrent and maybe in certain secret societies that arose, because you have to remember in the ancient world that this Jupiter figure, Zeus, and some would argue Jehovah, and this figure was the dominant figure in state religion. This was the god, and he represented the state. And I believe that Saturn arose as sort of a counter figure to the state, part of secret societies that were not necessarily in opposition to the state, but maybe wishing to usurp or subvert the state. Mm-hmm. That you see this symbolism associated with things like the Black Sun, associated with certain secret societies throughout, you know, right up to, you know, groups like the SS and things like that.
Your own blog, Secret Sun.
Yeah. Well, there's a different meaning there, but
I'm sure, yeah.
But I think that that's where that comes from. I think that the Saturn symbolism has almost I hesitate to say like a political connotation, but it almost reminds me of some of the classical connotations associated with Lucifer, you know, the rebel angel. Mm-hmm. There's a whole mythology that there's this Luciferian religion and there's this Luciferian corpus of literature. There's no such thing. There's no Luciferian literature. I mean, there's Satanism, which is actually a fairly recent development in culture and society. But, you know, Luciferianism is really a mythology and really arises from the mythology of Prometheus, who, again, is this figure that stands in opposition to the gods. I mean, Prometheus rebelled against Zeus, Jupiter, to bring light, fire to humanity. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the origin of a lot of this. I think it's a powerful symbol of opposition to certain secret societies. Mm-hmm. That's and if you really look at the history of this symbolism, that's usually what it's attached to.
Yeah.
Yeah. If that makes sense.
It does. It does. And I'm with you. We see a lot of people trying to point the finger at Luciferian cults or Satanist cults. And I really don't like that conclusion because that kind of assumes that the Christian paradigm is correct. And I definitely don't think that. So that's another area.
Well, that's the big problem with so much of conspiracy culture is that a lot of it comes from Christian apocalypticism. That there is this conspiracy of Satan, that Satan is in charge of the big conspiracy and the conspiracy is against God's rule and that, there's constant undermining of God's authority and that's what the conspiracy is. Mm-hmm. And I'm familiar with this because I had a very, you know, conventional conservative Christian upbringing. So I understand this thinking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But you know, the problem is too often, and I think it's really served, you know, the conspiracy becomes a pejorative in a lot of people's minds. And I think that a lot of that is the connotation with conservative Christian culture, that the two are sort of conjoined, that people identify conspiracy culture with evangelical or fundamentalist culture because so much of conspiracy culture is informed by fundamentalism and always has been. I mean, go back to, you know, proofs of a conspiracy in books like that, you know, going back to the 1700s and things like that.
Right. That makes sense. Although I definitely don't really like that religious catastrophism association. It's no doubt there. I guess one last thing I wanted to mention from NASA's announcements about Pluto is that they're saying they found apparently blue skies there and red water as well as red ice. And isn't that nice? It's a shame they couldn't have found THC there too. So my show would have gotten a nice little keyword boost this week. But,
yeah.
You know, curious findings, man. I'm not sure if that's their literal findings or if they're saying these things for more symbolic reasons again, you know?
It feels like it. Yeah. How can it have blue skies? It's so far from the sun.
Right.
I don't know.
Weird stuff.
It's very strange. That all feels very ritualistic to me. You know, blue skies, red water, you know, the Blue Lodge, the Red Lodge, things like that.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, what are they trying to say?
Yeah, you really start to wonder. I don't know. It's funny because, like I said, we have no way of challenging their data because they have the monopoly on these space probes. But there you go. We have to just take it as it comes. And some people just get so tired of it all that they become flat earthers. So.
Yep. So, man, we are really chugging along here. We really haven't even gotten into any of your serious writings here, but I know, like, let's talk about Heaven's Gate a little bit. I know you've had an interest in this Heaven's Gate cult, and it's largely considered silliness. It's a little bit old news, but there was one interesting point I've heard you make in that the Phoenix Lights coordinated pretty well with their quote-unquote departure, and that makes one think, doesn't it?
Yeah, Heaven's Gate is really interesting. One thing that you know, people do think they're kind of silly, and that's just the way the media painted them. If you actually go and read some of their writings on their blog, I mean, they were really way ahead of the curve when it comes to talking about the surveillance state and things like that. They were really calling that out way before the mainstream, you know, way before you saw things like Edward Snowden and things like that. They were involved, well, certain members were involved with the Army's Jedi program. So I don't know if they were kind of in the loop with some of these programs, some of these surveillance programs, but they were not happy, fun guys like, you know, the media, like they were just a bunch of silly Trekkies. They were pretty serious about what they were doing. They were like a very rigid, regimented group. I think that they've been painted, you know, for political reasons as goofy and unserious, but they worked really hard at what they were doing. I mean, you can certainly argue with what they were doing. You know, I don't think most of us would care to be part of that, but they were, you know, they were a genuine Christian Gnostic cult. Very classical Christian Gnostic cult. I mean, they had, this is funny because one of my great beefs with modern, you know, the sort of popularization of Gnosticism is that I think a lot of people who talk about Gnosticism sort of want it to be like, you know, like a replacement of sort of Protestantism that they grew up in. And that's not what Gnosticism was. I mean, if Gnostics were sort of time traveled to today, and you don't even have to go that far. I mean, if you go back and not even go back, I mean, go over and look at groups like the Yazidi and the Mandeans, you know, these groups that are all getting treated incredibly horribly over in Iraq by, you know, the Islamic Caliphate. It's not too much of a stretch to call them UFO cults. If you go and read their readings, it's all like clouds of light flying around and beings of light getting in and out of them and all this kind of stuff. It's pretty explicit, and it's really not that much different than the Heaven's Gate. The Heaven's Gate really definitely put it in that sci-fi context. I mean, they love their Star Trek, and they were really hardcore about it. But they were not all that different. You know, the whole thing about evolving into the next level above humans. I mean, that's, you know, a very Gnostic kind of concept. You know, escaping the cycle of reincarnation into, you know, human meat prisons and things like that. So I've been very interested in them for a number of years. But the thing that was interesting is that there was that, see, because this all, again, ties into, you know, Project Stargate, you know, the remote viewing programs and things like that. The remote viewing programs in the Army, people like Ed Dames and Prudence Calabrese and all these kind of people, these strange figures operating in and out of the military's remote viewing programs, that whole period back in, I guess, 97 now, when Hale Bopp showed up and there was a companion. Some of the astronomers had photographed a companion object, And they believed that it was this giant UFO that was coming to coming to get them and everything like that. And, you know, just around the time they decided to exit their vehicles, as they put it, that's when the Phoenix Lights flap started up. So that is people have argued ever since what the Phoenix Lights were. I don't think they were just military flares. I think the military flares were an intentional misdirection because they came a couple of hours later. Mm-hmm. But that's quite the coincidence.
It is.
And that's right near you. I mean, that whole thing is Rancho Santa Fe. I mean, I don't know how far away from you all that happened. But and they had money, too. And there's a whole tie-in with 9/11 with all that because apparently. Yeah, I mean, the people that they were renting that house from, some big mansion, had some involvement with 9/11 and everything like that. I mean, it's just a bizarre story that does not fit with the media narrative at all. It's much more complex and much more problematic and a lot more challenging than people have painted it as. And, like I said, their beliefs, they were pretty paranoid.
Yeah.
You know, they were not happy about the way things were going. And, I think one of the reasons that they chose to exit their vehicles, quote unquote, is that they were afraid. They were afraid of what was coming down the pike.
Right. And there also seems to be connections to Hollywood that seem a bit curious for a group like that. That's that small, right?
Yeah. That's the other thing is that, in 1982, I believe it was just before Dynasty, John Forsythe, who played Charlie on Charlie's Angels, played Marshall Applewhite. There was a TV movie which was meant to be a pilot for a series, which is just the most insane thing you can possibly imagine. There was a pilot made called The Mysterious Two, and it was based on Marshall Applewhite and Bonnie Nettles, and it was about these aliens who come down and purchase an old missile launching base and take I guess there's this whole question of whether they are aliens, but they gather up these people, and it's this whole sort of Woodstock. You can find the movie on YouTube. It's really surreal. It's like, why does this exist? It's one of these great enigmas. You try to figure out there was an event in the 70s where Heaven's Gate did vanish, and it became a huge news story because I think there were 30 or 40 of them that just vanished into the woods in Oregon. And I guess they told people that they were going to leave on a spaceship. I mean, they just were in the woods. They mm-hmm. weren't, but it became a huge news story. But the other thing, when I did this, I did what was called the Secret Star Trek series, which was basically taking all of the strange parapolitical and conspiracy and all the just weirdness involved with Star Trek and sort of putting into one huge series. And there's a lot of it, believe me. But one of the things with Heaven's Gate is that the week of their suicides, there was this episode of the Outer Limits that was basically like an idealized version of Heaven's Gate leaving Earth. It's incredibly bizarre. I don't know how many people actually knew that they were going to commit suicide that week. So you really wonder. But then again, I mean, they did have these connections to military intelligence. So
right.
And the writer on that episode was also one of the producers on that show, Stargate SG-1, which had direct connections to the U.S. Air Force. I mean, a lot of people don't realize that show, Stargate, was there was a lot of interest on the part of the Air Force, that the Air Force consulted on that series, which is just incredibly bizarre. What's the interest there?
Right.
First of all, that show was horrible. And second of all, it's like, it's so out there as far as the subject matter.
Yeah.
But, I really believe, within NASA, within certain segments of the military, and definitely within Hollywood, there's definitely like what I call like an ancient astronaut cult, like a cargo cult, mm-hmm. for better, lack of a better term, that I really do believe. I mean, I honestly believe this.
Yeah.
you know, and you can say it's not a question of whether you believe in their beliefs or not, but I definitely believe that there are people, you know, powerful people within these spheres of influence that do believe it.
Mm-hmm. One thing that alludes to that is in your piece where you're talking about the outer limits, you're talking about it, and it's really interesting because you have a show that's doing really well, and the network basically engineered its downfall, and you have this link to the intelligence community making it, and to quote the blog, you say, could the fact that leaked material from classified UFO briefing papers was finding its way to primetime television be another factor in the premature death murder of the Outer Limits? And I think that's so interesting. I guess it alludes to the fact that there was too much revealing happening because there are people in these intelligence communities that have an interest in UFOs and making, I guess, things manifest.
It wasn't just UFOs, though. I mean, it was also Project Paperclip. I mean, years before anybody knew about Project Paperclip, you know, they were sort of doing veiled allegories about that. They were doing stuff on MK Ultra.
Mm.
A couple of different episodes of it. They were really the producer of that series is a very, very interesting guy. He's the guy who's credited with being the real creator of Battlestar Galactica, a guy named Leslie Stevens. Mm-hmm. Now, why is Leslie Stevens interesting? Leslie Stevens interesting, first of all, because he came from military intelligence. He was involved. He was a captain in Army intelligence during World War II, but his father was a rear admiral in the Navy, and was not only an admiral, but he was a very powerful, high-ranking admiral who was involved in, you know, the Russia program. He was involved in debriefing Russian defectees, you know, people who came over from the other side, you know, Russian spies who defected and things like that. He was also an inventor. He invented the gear that was involved with a... Have you ever seen when a plane lands on an aircraft carrier, that gear that sort of stops the wheels?
Yes.
Well, Leslie Stevens' father invented that. I mean, this is how crazy this family is. And that's the guy who was the producer and creator of The Outer Limits.
Yeah.
You know, I mean...
And more.
People... Yeah, well, and he was also involved in the remake. And there's this whole interesting crossover between The Outer Limits and Star Trek that ties into both series, because there were people crossing over to, you know, both the old series. You know, like Leonard Nimoy was in a bunch of episodes, William Shatner, before they became known for Star Trek. And then later, people who were stars on, say, Star Trek The Next Generation became involved with the new Outer Limits. It was just very, very strange. And this is the kind of stuff that really falls down the memory hole. But you really have to wonder. But yes, there was very much... and you really have to remember the key... You know, when you talk about this, what happened to the show is what happened to the show is that Lyndon B. Johnson became president when John F. Kennedy was assassinated. It didn't just happen out of nowhere that the show all of a sudden was, I mean, you know, the show was assassinated right around the time JFK was assassinated. Right. You know, it's a very, the timing was not coincidence, in my opinion, I don't think. Yeah. But that's the kind of stuff that interests me. You know, when you talk about things in the media, you know, there is that kind of bottom level, the lower detritus, the stuff that filters down, the real obvious stuff that I think is just there to attract people. But there's that higher level, that really interesting stuff that's harder to find, and you really have to dig for it. But once you find it, it's like finding the mother lode, because it just keeps unveiling. I mean, the mysteries just keep revealing themselves. It's right. Really fascinating.
You're right. And I love that series and other pieces you've written that kind of dovetail with it. But you're right. It's just a crazy bunch of connections that are very deep and very expansive, and they just cross-reference with all kinds of things. And I guess,
well, you know, what does it boil down to? It boils down to that, you know, the thing that I try to find out when I dig when I poke my nose into these mysteries is that I want to find out what people really believe. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm in it for. When they talk to each other in their coded language, what are they saying?
Exactly.
What are they saying about what they believe?
Right.
And that's really what has always been my fascination.
Yeah, that's the bread and butter, especially when it comes to the elite. I love trying to get a handle on exactly what do the Rockefellers believe, you know, as opposed to what they've shaped the mainstream culture to be like. Because they tell us things like magic is just silliness, but then we see all these strange things that allude to the possibilities of magic that they might be involved in. So it is strange. Well, very cool, man. It has been a blast. Do you want to remind the people about your work and where to catch up on your writings before we go?
Just go to secretsun.blogspot.com. That's, you know, anything that you need to be linked to, I'll post on there.
Very cool. Awesome, man. Well, thanks again and keep it up. Take care of yourself out there, all right?
Thank you, sir.
There we have it, pod people. A little later than expected, but I am back in the saddle riding that conspiratorial steed into the digital sunset, and what a guest to have. I feel a bit bad because we recorded this almost a month ago at this point, but I had to fit in all those conference speakers, and now I can roll it out. And I like this one. I was introduced to Chris's work from Gordon White, one of my favorite previous guests, who actually showed me and my special lady around London a couple weekends ago, and he took us to see the Avebury Stone Circles, which he calls the Thinking Man's Stonehenge, and where Bill Hicks had one of his UFO experiences on mushrooms. And we went there on Halloween, no less. Very cool place. It was also on the date that pre-orders started for his new book, so if you like his writing, check that out. Lots of magic stacking there, and a big thanks to him for doing that. And for introducing me to Chris, because I think Chris is another guy who has a great blog and an interesting perspective on these sort of topics that's a little different from the main conspiracy spigot. And Chris writes about so much great stuff, it was hard for me to narrow down some things to talk about, but I think we did good, from synchromysticism and the human devolution to decoding NASA's secret narrative and the Heaven's Gate cult connections. It was a fun first hour, and of course, subscribers of THC Plus heard the second hour about Star Trek and the Council of Nine, which is one of Chris's most in-depth and unique series on his blog. We also got into sci-fi culture as a psyop, Obama and King Tut, various areas of Rockefeller funding, the occult renaissance, and the influence of movements like Theosophy and the Golden Dawn, H.P. Lovecraft's influences, Freemasonry, Chris's unique thoughts about the Apollo missions, and the X-Files and how magic works. Lots of fun stuff for sure, and I hope he'll come back from time to time. I really liked his perspective on NASA. I mean, why would they show us their work openly? Why would they show their technology to competing nations unprompted? It really doesn't make a lot of sense. We think they're there for the public good and the kumbaya benefit of humanity, but they really aren't. They're a military intelligence organization, and we should expect them to behave as such. We also spent a fair amount of time referencing the Flat Earth movement, but I also like how Chris puts it in that it's a punk rock anti-establishment vibe, and I get that from it too, and maybe that's why I was so excited to just have that big FU show that does throw the baby out with the bathwater. And maybe I'll try to get another guest in that realm on soon, maybe someone like Mark Sargent or something in the coming weeks, because Eric DeBay doesn't seem to have an interest in coming back on. I'm also talking to Crow soon, which should be fun, and Graham Hancock too this month, if everything goes according to plan. I did get a lot of mixed messages from the Jen Briney show, as expected. I get that. But so many people wrote something to the effect of voting doesn't matter or solve anything. And as much as I hate the system and just want to give a big punk rock middle finger to it, it's really just not accurate. I mean, your choices right now are voting or nothing. Unless you have a coup planned that I don't know about, you can only influence things by voting. Facebook posts about your outrage really don't do anything. I know we think that we're informing the public of some grave injustice, but a lot of times they just unfollow us and pay no attention. And again, it was more about small local elections. You know, the moments where you can fight for marijuana legalization or citywide high-speed internet or better public transportation or public food gardens. Yes, you have to work and vote for those things. Sitting on the sidelines complaining to yourself about chemtrails does not change the world. It's not that chemtrails aren't important, but it doesn't interfere with the elite's plans at all. And I know a lot of big issues aren't up for the vote. They aren't influenceable. I mean, Guantanamo Bay was supposed to be a big Obama issue. It's still there. But don't throw away your biggest tool for influence outright. Otherwise, they're just going to steamroll us completely. It's an imperfect answer for an imperfect world. I know that. I also did want to mention, I'm really going to try to move away from the mountains of emails and social media messages. I've been really thinking about how many hours a week that takes, and it's a lot. I'm going to start trying to focus my attention on what's happening on the THC Plus forum. I want to be more involved there, more focused. I want to flesh out some of the categories that are there and make part of it like a useful resource library kind of thing. A lot of you guys that are there already did that with the reading list. I mean, that's a great idea. But come hang out with me there. I'm just getting way too many emails and messages to keep up with everything the way I want to. And I feel rude not answering, but what are you going to do? I might even make a Q&A thread on the forums and start answering them in a monthly bonus show or something if people are interested in that. I get a lot of requests for doing a solo episode, and maybe this would be a way to do that. But either way, join THC Plus and come hang out with me on the forums. I will be there. A bunch of other great people are there. It is a good time. And I hope you liked this show. Again, big thanks to Chris. And I guess that's it. I've done my part. Your move, nine ancient multidimensional disembodied entities of ancient Egypt. Your frickin' move.
Sweet dreams to the elite. We're calling them out on THC. Uncovering secrets and conspiracies. Everybody's looking for something. Some of them want to use you. Some of them want to get used by you. Some of them want to abuse you. Some of them want to be abused. Abuse you. Some of them want to be a